was interesting when I pulled the cards for this year. When I pulled the card of tenderness and looked at it, it showed a picture of an angel petting a kitty. And I said, wow, this card is for me because I love kitties. So it was just super to get that card. And I noticed it even in Connie's book, Chatting with the Beloved, You Are Loved. Everything I'm going to talk about today is in this book. I could have done the whole thing from this book.
There's a sale over there, right?
But yes, to give you some variety, I used a lot of different people. Anyway, Connie's little statement I catch, she was talking to, she says, I adore them. Sometimes I think I love them too much and I should be more strict with them. And the beloved says, being strict with a cat is a waste of time. You can love them into well-being, but you cannot discipline them into well-being. Well said. So when I started working on this topic of tenderness, I thought it was going to be really a breeze. And when I started researching through different books and online, and I wasn't finding anything. And it was a quandary because I thought it would be a really easy subject. And I have a lot of different books at home. I was going through all these things and just like nothing was ringing tenderness. And then I'm living alone now pretty much. My grandson has lived with me most of 30 years, but he met the love of his life 2 years ago, and needless to say, he's gone probably 99% of the time. So most of the time I'm alone at the house. And one day I came home, and there on the counter was this little card. And it says, I love you, Graham. And it has a smiley face. Aww. And because I had been going through a lot of, you know, parents, when you let go of your children, well, sometimes it's a little difficult when you've been really close to them and, you know, you fly a little bird. Well, here was this little card. When I read that card and knowing that he had come and gone but had thought enough to leave me a little message, I love you, Graham. It just brought tears to my eyes, and I was just flooded with this feeling of tenderness. And from that moment, everything I touched, all I could find was tenderness in all of these books and online and everywhere. It was like, oh my goodness. I had to open it up inside myself before I started discovering it. And then it was like a flood. And one of the things I'd like to do today is to dedicate my talk today to my mother. Her name was Dorothy Schaefer. She was born in 1903 and lived till 1993. And in that period of time, she remembered going from riding into town on a buckboard behind two horses. And in her lifetime, she saw a man walk on the moon. She saw computers and TVs come into being. So what a change in one lifetime. She was probably the most gentle and kind person that I have ever known, and I learned so much from her example. And years ago, we lived in Simi Valley, California. We went to the Church of Religious Science there, and she was known as the Sparkling Book Lady. And she loved to sell the books and care for the books and pamphlets and magazines, and that was her special thing at church. And at the close of each service, when everyone sang, Let There Be Peace on Earth, my mother's voice was the loudest and most passionate, although often off-key, but she belted it out there. She just believed every word of that. And she taught me to love flowers and nature and the sacredness of all living things. She brought me to Science of Mind when I was a young teenager, and she taught me by example to live the spiritual life. So thank you, Mom. Oh. In the little angel book, the message is, Take actions that reflect the wisdom of your heart. Give generously and freely, and treat yourself and others with kindness and caring. And the goal for today's talk is to identify the various definitions of tenderness and how to enhance practical aspects of tenderness in our lives. In medicine, tenderness is pain or discomfort when an affective area is touched. I know a little about that this morning because my daughter and I worked outside all day yesterday in this gorgeous 70-degree weather. And we work like we belong to VDOT and we're out pounding the road. My daughter was driving our Bobcat and we repaired the gravel road. I was out there raking gravel. We repaired fences. We picked up debris. By yesterday evening, we were just absolutely exhausted. And so now today, you know, I have this little, I can feel it. It's a good feeling, though. I love getting out there. In the dictionary, tenderness is defined as easily crushed or bruised, fragile, easily chewed or cut, like tender beef, young and vulnerable, of a tender age, frail, delicate, sensitive. Another definition is tenderness is gentleness or is feelings of warmth and affection for someone or something. Which makes me think of the tenderness of the young plants in the spring just peeping through the soil. And right now in my yard, their daffodils are just about at full height, ready to bloom. And the daylilies are peeking up. Just everywhere, there's little things, there's buds on the trees. And that's just such a tender feeling of spring. And it makes us think that this cold, long winter is almost over, and I think Mother Nature is going to give us another kick tonight. And I'm so excited about gardening this year. I'm closing down my big garden, and I'm going to raise beds this year. So it's more of a condensed gardening, less weeding, and it's really going to be fun. I was telling Connie earlier that I ran across something online yesterday that talked about bale gardening, which I had never heard of, and it talks about how you can plant plants in straw bales, and then as the bales break down, they feed and nourish the plants. They hold the water in, so you have less watering. And the photographs looked really pretty, where they had arranged bales in like a rectangle and then had planted in there. So I ordered the book, because I have tons of bales in my chicken area that I've used for protection for them over winter, and so now when spring comes, I have something new I can do with them. Another thing to think about with tenderness is when we see babies, whether it's a human baby or a kitten or a puppy or a little chicken. Had a picture on Facebook of a baby giraffe, and it was one of the cutest little things I ever saw.
Yeah.
And these little creatures just bring such a feeling of tenderness to us when we see them or hold them. And I don't know if any of you go to Tractor Supply. Probably not, but I live out in a rural area.
I know where it is.
And right now... Oh my gosh, I was in there. It's so hard not to just scoop them all up and take them home. They have teeny little chickens, little yellow ones and little red ones and little black ones, and they have the ducks, and you know, and they're all cheeping and peeping, and they're just so cute. The only problem is that they grow up. Last year on Easter, my grandson presented me with a dozen baby ducks. And I had not had fowls on my property at all, and I didn't know how to raise ducks, and it was cold. We raised them in the basement, and I found homes for six of them because 12 was just way too many. So they stayed with me about 6 months, and they were just absolutely beautiful little creatures, and they became really tame. I could open the door and go, duck, duck, and then I'd hear, quack, quack. They'd always talk back. And then after about 6 months, they just flew away. And they've never come back, so I guess they joined another group or found another pond. And so I decided no ducks this year. So then, after grieving over the loss of my ducks, I came home from a vacation in Virginia Beach one day, and here in my yard were two geese, a duck, and two chickens. My grandson replaced the ducks. What a weird combination. That's what I have now, except I added another chicken, and I have pullets ordered for this month. I have a 10 or 15 more chickens coming in. So it was interesting. His little tender heart was what grandma has to have for little babies. And then also my very first chicken in the flock, when I go out there to put her to bed, she squats down to let me pick her up. And when she does that, I just get all squishy inside. It's so tender to see her, you know, this little creature doing that. So I have such fun with these guys. Another thing are terms of endearment. We all have nicknames for, you know, our loved ones, or babes, baby, sweetie, honey, all of those things. Anyone here want to share a special pet name you have for yourself or for somebody else?
Love Muffin. It's out there now.
Love Muffin. All right. Anyone else?
Kitty poo and baby stuff.
Great. My daughter's called Chloe Rose, and I call her Chloe Rosie Pudding.
Oh,
Chloe Rose.
Chloe Rosie.
Chloe Rosie Pudding.
That's cute.
My mom always called me when I was little Chick.
Chick.
Chick. Yeah. And my initials BJ, but that was. She felt that way. She was very, very tender.
Yes.
Yeah, like we were a little.
Yes.
Chick.
Great. Another expression of tenderness is romantic love. And from a book called Tiger, Tiger by Robin Donnell, she says, falling in love was easy when romantic attraction was combined with hungry, unsated desire. They formed a glamorous, glittering bauble as fragile as it was alluring, a bauble that could shatter as soon as it was grasped. Tenderness was a different story. It had staying power and the promise of a future. Then there's spiritual tenderness. And from the book called Smile Anyway by Rochelle Goodrich, she says, you know those little moments when an unexpected act or a spoken word affects your heart with sweet intensity? A simple gesture that possesses deep personal meaning beyond what anyone realizes. You know those tender moments. That's God pressing his lips on your forehead and whispering, I love you. I researched a few Christian books. One was called Tenderness of Spirit by Watson. And Watson says the very essence of the gospel is a divinely imparted tenderness and sweetness of spirit. Without this, even the strongest religious life is a misrepresentation of the true Christ life. Even among intensely religious people, nothing is more rare to find than a continuous, all-pervading spirit of tenderness. What specific gravity is to the planet, what beauty is to the rainbow, what perfume is to the rose, what rhythm is to music or to poetry, what the pulse is to the heart, what harmony is to music. Mm-hmm. All this and much more is what tenderness of spirit is to religion. Mm-hmm. Without tenderness of spirit, the most intensely righteous religious life is touched with vinegar. Mm-hmm. Their very purity has an icy coldness to it. Divine tenderness of spirit instinctively avoids wounding the feelings of others. It cannot scold or scowl or threaten. It has lost the power of quarreling. It instinctively buries and forgets all bad things. It understands the words of the Holy Spirit, be ye tender-hearted and forgiving toward one another. Tenderness must be in the very nature, and forgiveness is but the behavior of that nature. And from another Christian author, Brendan Manning, he says, divine tenderness of heart has a behavior which is heavenly. It feels for the poor, seeks to deliver the oppressed, enlightens the deceived, lifts up the fallen, and restores the erring. It cannot scold or scowl or threaten, though it will not fail to give an earnest and loving warning or reproof when necessary. It does not quarrel. It instinctively buries and forgets all bad things. It feels all things from God's standpoint and lives but to receive and transmit the spotless sympathies and expressions of the Christ. And Watson quotes the Bible from Ephesians, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you, and be ye kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you, and walk in love as Christ also has loved us." The insistence of the absolutely indiscriminate nature of compassion within the kingdom is a dominant perspective of almost all of Jesus' teachings. And what is indiscriminate compassion? Take a look at a rose. Is it possible for the rose to say, "I'll offer my fragrance to good people," and withhold it from the bad? Or can you imagine the lamp that withholds its rays from a wicked person who seeks to walk in its light? It could do that only by ceasing to be a lamp. And observe how helplessly and indiscriminately a tree gives its shade to everyone, good and bad, young and old, high and low, to animals and humans and every living creature, even to the one who seeks to cut it down. This is the first quality of compassion, its indiscriminate character. What makes the kingdom come is heartfelt compassion, a way of tenderness that knows no frontiers, no labels, no compartmentalizing, and no sectarian divisions. Scripture suggests that the essence of the divine nature is compassion, and that the heart of God is defined by tenderness. Tenderness of spirit is preeminently divine. It is not the delicacy and soft sensibility of a mere gentle makeup which some people naturally possess. Neither is it the courtesy of manner which results from high culture and beautiful social training, though these are valuable in life. It is a supernatural work throughout the whole spiritual being. It is an exquisite interior fountain of God's own tenderness, opened up in the inner man, inundating the soul, saturating the manners, words, and tones of the voice, refining and molding the whole being after the image of Him who was infinite, meek, and lowly in heart. It cannot be borrowed or put on for special occasions. It is emphatically supernatural and must flow out incessantly from the inner fountains of a life of intimate fellowship with Christ. And that leads us to self-compassion. To be more loving with ourselves is something worth doing, as it translates to all that you do and all others you interact with. In the Science of Mind magazine in February of 2012, there's an article about Dr. Kristen Neff, a University of Texas psychologist, and the article is entitled "The Healing Power of Self-Compassion." Dr. Neff quotes Ernest Holmes as writing, "Love is the greatest healing and drawing power on earth, the very reason for our being." And she says, "Yet how many of us block love's healing power with an endless barrage of self-criticism that makes us feel flawed, inferior, and unworthy?" Self-compassion, she explains, means treating yourself with the same type of kindness, concern, and understanding that you would treat a good friend. Most of us are much kinder to the people around us than we are to ourselves. Dr. Neff says that self-compassion has three components, and that by using them whenever you're in distress, you can stop a bout of self-criticism in its tracks and begin building the power of self-compassion for yourself. And the first component she names is mindfulness. Mindfulness comes first, because when you're busy blaming yourself, you cannot even recognize how you feel. You have to be aware of when you're suffering in order to give yourself compassion. It takes a balanced, mindful approach to watch how you treat yourself to keep from getting caught up in drama, blowing things out of proportion. Self-compassion begins when you can just see things as they are in the present moment. To begin practicing self-compassion, you can ask yourself, what am I feeling now? Am I feeling sad or disappointed, confused? Her second component of self-compassion is common humanity. Self-compassion transcends blame and judgment. It doesn't matter whether you caused your suffering or not. The human experience isn't perfect. No one's perfect, and everyone suffers at one time or another. You don't need to feel cut off and separated from others when you suffer. In fact, that's precisely the time when you can feel connected to others. The next time you make a mistake, be a better friend to yourself. Instead of judging yourself, affirm, it's okay. Everyone makes mistakes. It's all right. I'll do better next time. The third component that she names is kindness to yourself. This means not just letting go of self-judgments, but also actively soothing yourself. It's important to actually take the conscious decision to soothe and support yourself when you're in distress, as you would a dear friend. Give yourself a hug. Cross your arms in front of your chest and squeeze. Then say soothing words to yourself. It's okay. I'm all right. Things are getting better. In conclusion, Dr. Neff says that self-compassion helps us think more clearly so we can solve our problems more effectively. She says that self-compassion gave her the incredible ability to see herself more clearly and to learn from her mistakes. And we'll be exploring some of Dr. Neff's work after the break as we work on her scale of measuring self-compassion. From the book Spiritual Growth by Saneya Roman, she says, love all your thoughts, even those that are limited or fearful. Think of them as small children needing your love and reassurance. If you catch a negative thought, don't make yourself wrong for having it. Love all your negative thoughts and they will have less power over you. If you are imagining things you want to stop thinking about, love yourself for thinking them and it will be easier to stop. Put a positive thought alongside your negative thought. One positive thought can cancel out hundreds of negative ones. You can love your negative feelings and thus raise their vibrations out of limitations into light. Or you can hate and resist them. Hating them gives them more power over you. Love your humanness. It is what you're here to experience and learn from. Love your weaknesses as well as your strengths, for those are the areas that most need your love to evolve. As you love your negative feelings, your world expands and your choices increase. And this makes, when she's talking about when you hate your negative feelings and resist them, the talking about the law of attraction, of how whatever it is that you're focusing on and giving all your feelings to, it's, law of attraction is just going to give you more of the same. And Connie quotes that quite a bit in her book. In fact, I think I have a marker on that. Let's see here. Law of attraction. Oh, yes. Let's see. Connie says, in the middle of a big problem, it's hard sometimes to find any love in it. And the beloved says, so true, see, because the law of attraction is always bringing you more of whatever you're focused on. So you start to criticize and worry about something, and then you attract even more to criticize and worry about. Law of attraction will never stop bringing you more of what you focus on. That's why a relationship that goes downhill gets worse and worse. Sometimes both people wonder who it is that's taken over their bodies. Law of attraction works the same for amplifying the positive as it does the negative. Once you train your brain to focus on what you love, you will begin to change how you feel about yourself and your life naturally from the inside out. There's a blog online by Adrienne Ryan called Everyday Livingness, Living the Love That We Are in All That We Do. And she talks about tenderness towards self. She says, have we limited tenderness to the quality of meat or something expressed between lovers or parents and their children? It seems to me that tenderness is much bigger than this, and that it starts with how we treat ourselves in a million small ways throughout the day. With a little awareness and focus, we can soon become masters of tenderness, enriching our lives and those we share it with in remarkable ways. She asks these questions. Have you experienced a tender moment? A tender touch? A tender thought? Have you beheld a tender act? And she says, just asking these questions returns me to the tenderness I have felt. It seems to be something that is alive in me, and when I reconnect with it, it melts me. And whatever I'm doing, I can't help but be tender with. Tenderness flows from within and through me. Tenderness can be felt in my voice, my touch, my thoughts, my ears, and my eyes. And it may sound funny, but even my taste becomes tenderness when I allow it. Miss Ryan says, these are things I notice when I become tender. My body lets go. I notice how I've been holding my shoulders tight or my forearms hard. The tension drops away. When I take my time, with no rush or force, suddenly I have a sense of plenty of time. I feel with my whole body, and thinking from here leads the way. Tenderness is definite and delicate all at once, with purpose, not wishy-washy at all. I have focus with no indecisiveness or indecision in what to do. Everything is clear and simple. The choice to allow tenderness feels powerful, deliberate, and not half-hearted. I am more playful, not rough or imposing, but light, open, and full. I am super present in the moment, not before or beyond it, or even thinking of anything else. I enjoy the fullness of love, accepting the joy, letting it out and in. These exquisite elements of tenderness are medicine to the body and being, available whenever the choice is made and applicable well beyond special moments with a select few. Tender washing up, tender typing, tender brushing hair. It melts away the hardness I can bring to get through the day and creates a deep sense of well-being that makes such a difference in everything. Tenderness is like the warmth of the sun. It is there for everyone, has no off button, no dimmer, and does not reserve itself for a select few. We need to remind ourselves that we have this tenderness inside of us all the time, and all have equal access to it all of the time. So often in life, we have situations that we respond to with hardness because we don't want to feel the hurt we feel, so we harden ourselves to manage. Yet that hardness is not managing anything. It hurts us more than the original hurt, whereas being tender allows us to feel what there is to feel and hold ourselves in tenderness as we do so. And I found this little saying I thought was really neat to share with you. Children laugh 400 times a day. An average adult laughs 15 times a day. Somewhere along the way, we have lost 385 laughs a day. So lighten up, everybody. Laugh tenderly. I was telling Connie earlier that I get a lot of information from Grit magazine and Mother Earth magazine because I'm a rural country gal. And I found this this article in Grit magazine that I wanted to share with you. May sound like it's a little bit off the beaten path, but here goes. The article is on homesteading today and what challenges can arise. And it makes a comparison between homesteading in the 1800s and homesteading today and how technology has changed all that. And he talks about that back in the 1800s, the earliest settlers in America made their way from the bustling East to golden opportunities in the West. The safest way for pioneers to travel was by wagon train. And these wagon trains crisscrossed the Old West on trails. And there's the old Chisholm Trail, the Santa Fe Trail, the Oregon Trail, and so on. And along the way, they saw incredible beauty. And they also observed two surprising things that they never expected. And the first was passing wagons observed discarded old household goods along the way. Second, the trail they were traveling was littered with graves. Starting in the east and heading west, the pioneers were committed to seeking fame and fortune in a rush of enthusiasm, but they had no idea what that commitment would cost. As for the belongings discarded along the wayside, it became clear to the pioneers that if they were to reach the next waterhole, they had better balance between their immediate needs and their eventual wants. If a bedroom set stood in the way, out it went. If a piano was too heavy for the horses, out it went and they let it go. And if luggage was too cumbersome, you guessed it, out it went too. Better to discard those things that stood in the way of reaching the West than the alternative. The alternative? Those who hung on to their unnecessary baggage for dear life, more often than not, were the occupants of the graves that littered the trails. What to keep as a necessity was an important decision. To live or die depended upon their decision. The pioneers who successfully made it to the West figured it out. Those who clung to the past and all their unnecessary baggage didn't make it to the next waterhole. They wore out their animals, themselves, and their family, unable to cross the mountains. Those who let go of the past and all the unnecessary baggage were those who were ready to meet their future. So how does this relate to us? In order to live in the now, the present moment, we too need to divest ourselves of unnecessary mental and emotional baggage, guilt, and other memories of the past that no longer serve us. As we choose to be tender with ourselves, more compassionate with ourselves, we need to release the past and fully embrace that we are one with Source, that we are beloved of God, that we are true expressions of divine spirit and divine love. In the modern day, homesteaders came up with 10 things that they felt were helpful to keep their spirits high and their goals in mind. And the first was to share our time and our expertise by helping others. The second was to learn new skills like first aid and other survival skills. And third, if you have the internet, stay in contact with friends and family. And the fourth was learn to be a good electrician, mechanic, and seamstress. It comes in handy. Five is waste less food. And six is to eat healthy food. Keep your family close and invite friends and neighbors over once in a while for company. It is good for your health to laugh and share some great food. And eight is keep your relationship with God strong. Our spiritual health is very important. Be willing and able to spend time with yourself. Calm your mind and listen to what is placed on your heart. Nine is learn from the mistakes and share with others. And 10, wake up each day knowing that today is a present. Enjoy it. And here's a quote from Dr. Patrick Cameron. I invite you to consider defining your life by what you love. Find a handful of things that you love and direct your energy and heart in that direction each and every day. It doesn't matter what they are, just as long as you create the feeling, tone, and experience of expansion, joy, peace, and love in you. What you appreciate, appreciates. In a state of appreciation, you will more fully experience abundance as your natural state of being. I found this affirmation somewhere, and I love it, and I wanted to share this one with you. We come together and open ourselves to feel the gentle, infinite tenderness of divine love flowing through us. When I read that, I could just feel that. That just resonated for me. Gentle, infinite tenderness of divine love flowing through us, softening and soothing, relaxing and restoring. We see this tender love as a warm and gentle light radiating out from our heart center. We hear it as a loving voice within saying, you are precious beyond imagining. You are greatly loved. You are love. In Connie's book, the beloved says, the deepest desire people have is to know they are loved. When you really feel immersed in the infinite love of God, there is no limit to how much love you are able to give. It flows through your words, vibrates in your vocal cords, shines in your eyes, radiates in your smile. People get it because you live it. You teach best by your example. Just let yourself feel the love, bask in it, breathe in it, savor it, appreciate it. Open your heart and your mind to the evidence of it. That's law of attraction in action. As you focus on love and feel love and loved, more love comes to you from everywhere. From this little book called Bite by Ernest Holmes, he says, Jesus said, I am the light of the world. Jesus was one who walked fully in the light. There is a light that permeates the world, but we have not sensed it. We need, in the silence of our own contemplation, to take time to feel that light and to see it. We have to hitch our earthly wagon to a spiritual star, because if we do not, we are going to hitch it to a make-believe life, something that has no light at all. The only light there is the light eternal. Dr. Holmes says, very frequently I sit down all alone for 2 hours and listen to the silence and it speaks, and look into the darkness and it turns light. It is there and there is no question about it. God is warmth, spirit is colorful. The universe is filled with light. A voice speaks from everything, running brooks, stones and trees, animals and moon and stars, deserts and stillness. And you can listen to the stillness until it speaks to you. Another book I was reading through was called Walking with the Angels by White Eagle. And when I ran across this passage, it reminded me so much of the Ernest Holmes statement on light. And White Eagle says, in the beginning was the wind, and the word came from the heart of silence, from the stillness of life. Silence is power. Life becomes active in the silence when the word of God goes forth. Noise, discord is disruptive, disintegrating. And remember, the mind can make as much noise as the mouth. Meditate on the stillness of God. Thus the light radiates from you, and thus you carry the rays of healing and peace. White Eagle also says, live in harmony with yourself as a whole, to be gentle, tolerant, and understanding of yourself, to be wise in your thoughts about yourself, not harsh, punitive, or overstrict, but patient and accepting. So how, if we are struggling with emotional and mental distress, do we bring harmony into this struggle? How can we find any kind of balance while the emotions are still strong? At the heart of any true spiritual teaching, and the first step in any spiritual development, is the knowledge that we are loved, unconditionally and without end. This awareness of being loved, even when we are struggling for mental and emotional control, is what brings harmony. More than this, our faith in the unconditional love which embraces us is what will eventually enable us to be free, joyous, and fearless, and what enables us to truly love under all circumstances. This is the love of God, of the Great Spirit, the love which the angels serve. Know that you are loved. Seek to know this. Imagine this. Think this. Feel this, if only for a moment, and all else will follow. You will know what to do and how to be, for love breeds love and calls to the love within you to rise and shine like a star. And I'd like you all to close your eyes, and I'd like to share this affirmation, part of which is from a Holmes reader on practical wisdom. Love is God, and God is infinite, eternal, and omnipresent. Therefore, love is infinite, eternal, and omnipresent, the creative principle back of everything. I feel love as a stream of light flowing from God, through me, out to everything I think about today. I know this loving light is bringing peace and joy to all it touches. The infinite tenderness of divine love sustains me today and every day. Nothing but love and lovely things can come to me, and I insist on seeing the love in all people and all things. I know that in love there can be no separation, for love unites. I know the love I express blesses all who are in any way touched by it. It heals every condition and harmonizes every experience. Now, from our heart center, we see and feel this gentle, tender love glowing out from us, lighting up the room. And joining together, we radiate our tender love to our family and friends. We feel our love for them, their love for us, and we continue to send our love further outward through our communities, outward around the world, a glowing, flowing, tender love, offering peace and understanding, offering health and abundance for all. For we are all one, one flowing with infinite tenderness, infinite love, infinite being. We know that God's infinite love is flowing with joy through all people, all things. We are immersed in love, the highest gift of heaven and the greatest good on earth. And so it is.
So it is.
Thank you, Mary Rose.
Thank you. Oh, and I didn't share. This is, my daughter and I are going to build this. This is a shed.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that adorable?
That is so cute.
It's shaped like a little church.
A little church. Well, out by my garden and my chickens.